Welkom bij deze speciale podcast van De Groene Amsterdammer. Wat is er nu mooier dan theater, muziek, dans en opera in volle bezetting, in volle zalen, in een zomers Amsterdam? Kortom, deze podcastserie maken we over het Holland Festival. Vorig jaar bestond het 75 jaar, dus dit jaar maken we de 76e editie mee. Zoals altijd heeft het Holland Festival een associate artist, kunstenaar die samenwerking aangaat, grenzen overschrijdt en genres doorbreekt. Dit jaar is dat zangeres, componist en beeldend kunstenaar Anoni. Welcome to the special podcast from De Groene Amsterdammer. In this podcast series we look ahead to the program of the Holland Festival and we talk to connoisseurs, critics and the makers themselves. My name is Christian Weitz, and today we are talking about Exotica, a performance by Amanda Piña. Amanda Piña is a choreographer, a Mexican Chilean living in Vienna and Mexico City. But today we are talking to her from Amsterdam with a live connection to Antwerp, so a very international setting. Welcome, Amanda.
Thank you very much.
So we are here to talk about your new creation. It's called Exotica, and in Exotica you want to honor some choreographers and dancers from the 20th century that are not so much known perhaps to us. Can you tell a little bit about these? What kind of people are or were they?
Yeah, exactly. So there are four figures.
Yeah.
One of them is a direct ancestor, which is very interesting because I am discovering the life and work of a great grand aunt of my father, Mexican side.
Okay, yes.
But the others are Nyota Inyoka, who lived between 1896 and 1971. François Feral Benga, 1906 to 1957, and Leila Bedekan or Bedieckskan,
yes,
from 1903 to 1986. So different time spans, but they were all famous in Europe in the 20s.
Yes.
And they were figures that represented some of the countries where they were working, like, for example, Nyota Inyoka. She traveled extensively with her performances and she represented France in Venice, in many places. We have to think also that France was a different context than today. Mm-hmm. It was an imperial setup. It is still today, even though it doesn't want to acknowledge so much publicly, but that was a huge territory that was under the domain of the French nation state. So she was traveling, representing this country. And for example, François Feral Benga, he was very mm-hmm. important for modern painters and artists. It was a figure of inspiration. They were coming from Senegal and had danced with the Ballet Noir together with Josephine Baker. Mm-hmm. So Leila Bedekan was a princess or was a rich lady from Constantinople. Today Istanbul, who decided to become a dancer and had financial independence. So they are very different, but they all share the same context, which in Europe we have to imagine in that time, no internet, no, the world was vaster, was larger, yes, than today, right? Today we can Google things.
Yes.
In that time we knew about the world through the accounts of performances like the ones they did, no?
Yes, they were traveling through Europe and you had to go and see them in order to know what they were doing.
Exactly, and know what the world or EXO was, like, I don't know, Mexican dance or Indian dance or African dance, you know, which were kind of concepts that were very large. Today we will talk about, okay, if it's an African dance, we cannot anymore talk about African dance. We can talk about, I don't know, Congolese dance or Senegalese dance, no? But in that time, the world is much more mysterious. And it's the beginning of you know, contexts like the botanical garden, like the zoo, and like the Exposition Universelle in France. So there is something very, very sort of institutive, or it's the beginning of a certain gaze that will stay in.
They were perhaps seen as the title of your work is Exotica, so they were seen as exotic. So say though they were from somewhere out, not European exotic. So we perhaps in Europe there was a tendency to romanticize these figures, or
maybe something like that, and also maybe to think that the context where they emerge from, it's called Théâtre de Variété. And if we think about, like, I don't know, late 18th century, people that were in this theater were like, I mean, there were not a lot of women of traditional context in these settings, because you were going to go see women who were wearing less clothing. In that time, clothing, you know, Europe was, today, Europeans are known for wearing less clothes in relation to other countries. But in that time, it was more, you know? So in a way, I think that there is a relationship between the performance of the other and also something we could call today white gaze.
Yes.
That is so interesting to start to understand what is it and how we are all somehow within certain frames that are there per default.
Mm-hmm.
And how to think of them critically and how to go beyond them, right? And to encounter these figures as artists in their own names.
Yes, yes. But first, before we start talking about the white gaze and decolonize the dance canon, can you tell me what has been preserved of their work? Because, as you said, there were no YouTube recordings of these people. So how did you manage to get the idea of their work?
Well, I was part of a research project with Centre National de la Danse in Paris, together with Nicole Heitzinger, Sandra Chatterjee, Christina Giringer, like Franz Anton Kramer, like researchers in dance.
Mm-hmm.
And we found a lot of material that I was surprised to find also material about my great-grand-aunt in the National Library of France. There are some videos filmed later, like in the 30s and 40s. But some of the works don't have a video reference, only pictures.
Okay, so how do you go from pictures to dance?
Exactly. We're going to use video material. There is some footage and it's really amazing.
Okay.
And we are going to also speculate on the possibility of movement from fixed images.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Animating fixed images. And also like trying to listen to this artist and try to imagine what they would have done, right?
Yes,
putting ourselves in their position.
Yes, and I can imagine this, especially when you talk about this ancestor of yourself. That is La Sarabia?
Yes, La Sarabia.
Okay.
Exactly.
Can you tell something about her?
Yes, she was taken as a child to France from Mexico. Her mother had financial independence and decided to divorce a man who she might not have been happy with. So she took her child to Paris, and there she learned dance, but she also had learned some Mexican dances of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And she becomes this figure that was also like very prominent. She performed in many theaters in Paris. Her artist name was La Sarabia. Her real name is Clemencia Piña.
Mm.
So we share the surname.
Yes.
And she was doing some Mexican dance, but also some Spanish dance. And what I find very fascinating about this time is that we don't see a solidification of identity. They could invent the dances of their countries, you know, because some of the countries were at the beginning of the concept of nation state. You know, Mexican Revolution is 1910. So there is a lot of imagination in their works, but also a lot of intuition about what the later dances of the nation state will look like. Somehow it's like a space of fantasy, speculation.
Yes.
So she was performing between Spanish, flamenco, Mexican, but also tango and mashish, some Brazilian form of social dance. So as you see, their frame of action was much larger, since the world was also a larger context. Right?
Yes, and they were also not representatives of any European national state. So they were more cosmopolitan people.
Definitely. But also, what I find very interesting is that European nation states were being born, you know, like the First World War, Austrian Empire, Austrian-Hungarian yes. fell. So it's really the beginning of another time. And I think they are reference for other artists that then create paintings or create music through the avant-garde that they were proposing, because it's kind of interesting frame where they were producing their works, no? A frame which allows them a lot. At the same time, also reduce them to this stranger. For example, Feral Benga, François Benga, mm-hmm. He made a piece and it was received as not African enough. They mm-hmm. were a modern artist.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And the context nowadays is a lot different. So how you want to breathe new life into their works, and how are you trying to do this? How do you bring this work to the modern time, to this context?
Well, for me, the question is, can we host these dances in our bodies? And because dances are always contemporary, I don't believe that there is something like traditional. There is no difference between contemporary and traditional for me or folklore, because in terms of time, because mm-hmm. all dances are made by living bodies which live today and they are contemporary, yes. right?
Yeah.
So in that sense, we are going to host the presence of these dances in our bodies. And I think yes. between the dances and ourselves, our experience and the experience of this artist, there is this gap in which the piece is going to be actualized and it's going to vibrate there between, you know, today, the 20s of the 21st century and the 20s mm-hmm. of the 20s. And it's 100 years of time. A lot has changed, but also not a lot has changed. And that is, I think, the question of the piece.
Yes. What didn't change? Because when you're performing this in Amsterdam, then you have an audience that is perhaps not very familiar with these kind of dances, with this, and you want to make a dialogue between what you called the white gaze and these dancers.
You know, the white gaze is there and it's also not there. It's interesting. For example, I always use this example. I saw a Brazilian piece and it was beautiful. I saw it in Wiener Festwochen in Vienna. And I felt there was certain violence in the room because the world they were presenting, the performers and the artists, was being consumed as an image. And I think I would like to reflect on that in through the senses. So that is a sensual piece, that is a piece that is appealing, that it can touch you, mm-hmm. that it can intoxicate you with something that is like a vibe or yes. you know, a curvy feeling, some kind of hotness in the piece. But at the same time, think about how can we make a context in which we exorcise this white gaze from the room. We cleanse mm-hmm. it away so that we can really encounter these other worlds of sensing and meaning and not only consume them as image.
Yeah. Exorcise, that sounds like a bit a ritual or a seance. And I saw on YouTube a few fragments of an earlier piece, the Jaguar and the Snake. That was this circle and people sitting around there, and they are becoming part of this ritual. Is that also what is going to happen in Exotica?
Or? In a way, yes, but it's a frontal piece and it's made for a classical theater, which is something I love because I always wanted to escape these classical theater forms. And yeah. Now I think this piece is made for that setting. And these are like théâtre de variété, short acts that come one after the other, sequential. Yes. Yes. But I really wish that through the passing of these dances, we enter into some state together with the audience.
Yeah.
And that from there, we can depart into something like a ritual, yes.
Yeah, and getting into the stage also implies that it's not an intellectual thing. It's knowledge
sensual.
That goes from the senses. Yes, that's it. So that also requires an attitude for the audience to get involved. How do you get your audience involved?
Well, I think that if we say, for example, that there is this form of looking at the world of others as image that we know, and there is another proposal, which is be together for, I don't know, 1 hour and get into the sensing the movement or feeling the music together, or, you know, like, kind of heightening or listening or vision together. And I think that's what we are going to propose. Then it can be something like a trip together, a traveling together. And I hope this is what is going to happen, you know. But of course, I think it's also important to say, like, there is a ghost in the room. And the ghost in the room is male, you know, it has been white, you know, and we are in a process of allowing this ghost to be seen. So when we look at the ghost, like when children are afraid under the bed, and then they look at it and it's nothing.
It's
gone.
Yeah.
Or it is never gone, but it is, as we said, like brought into attention so that it's not in the power.
No, but you have to relate to it in some way.
In some way, yes. Mm-hmm. But what for me is most important is that these artists are European because they did their work in Europe and they represent, you know, Europe. And also that they are part of the canon.
Yes.
They are totally part of the Western canon. They are not traditional Indian dance, you know. It's like this contemporary ritualistic Indian dance that emerges in the dances of Nyotanyoka, for example, which is completely contemporary already. It's fantastic.
So you want to install them into the canon or reinstall them? Were they ever in this canon?
But they have been erased. Maybe they have been racialized, right? Because they are obviously people of color who did dances that were not obviously modern, because they work with the reappearance of ancestral forms of dancing. So, you know, Nyotanyoka channeled Indian dance, and François Feral Benga was doing dances that kind of spoke about black bodies. So Leila Bedekan also was into the body of, she's Kurdish, and she grew up in Constantinople, so she's Kurdish minority in Turkey, but she came from a high family. So in a way, they were central to the avant-garde of the time, but they have been totally forgotten. I think it's an issue of dance history and what goes inside dance history, because Nicole Heitzinger, my friend, researcher and dramaturg, she had to look around a lot to find all this material.
Yes.
Find the sources, like investigate, no, research. So there is something about who represents and who is taken inside the history, that by bringing them back, we are sort of making a gesture that is important for the history of European dance, which is to accept that the history is made by different people having different bodies and coming from very different contexts, because this is a very interesting context. Europe is quite small, so there's a mixture of people since so many times, right? So again, this also goes in the direction against the solidification of identity.
Yes, yes, yes. And this is what we call the decolonization of art, to decolonize it.
Yeah, I think because Europe is also much more than European modernity. Europe is made of so many, you know, different threads that make a very interesting pattern. And there are these movements now of only wanting to see some kind of purity that doesn't exist at the end, because it's like... Yeah.
Is this work a part of your bigger project called Endangered Human Movements, or is it separate from it?
It is part, because I've been always interested in looking at the reappearance of ancestral forms of movement. But it's the first time that I really go to my European heritage, because if I became an artist in Europe, you know, I am from Mexico and from Chile, and I became an artist by chance, by luck, by my own effort, but here in Vienna, actually in Vienna, and also, you know, in relation to Holland, in relation to Belgium, in relation to Germany. And in that, that is sort of my field of work. And with this piece, I get to look at it as my tradition. And then I look for figures that can be my artistic ancestors. So it's a quite autobiographical in this case, in a way. Yes.
And that is the link to the Endangered Human Movements, because Endangered Human Movements, that's the title of a long-term project which you started focusing on human movement practices which have been cultivated for centuries all over the world.
Yes. So I was in, because, you know, we were talking about extinction of species and extinction, disappearing of diversity, biodiversity. And I started this research in 2014, and I started to notice that, you know, biological and cultural diversity, they go hand in hand. So I am somebody who likes to research and who likes to understand art also as research, art as a field that can teach you and others, or can be transformative in the sense that it can give you other experiences, knowledges. Art as a form of knowledge is interesting for me too. Dance as a form of knowledge. And I started to look at dances that were disappearing at the beginning of the project. But then I realized, maybe they are not disappearing. Maybe they are resurging. Many of them were resurging. And then I started to look at this division between modern or contemporary and traditional or folkloric. So I've been working in this field, to understand what is real about those divisions and what is constructed and really has to do with racialization, for example. And I find out that dance is ancient, but it's also always new. So it's not to be simplified. It's a very rich place of inquiry, where you find that things are this, but at the same time that, and they are not this or that.
No, they're both ancient and happening at this very moment.
Yes, exactly.
That is perhaps what it shares with music as an art form. Can you tell us perhaps a little bit about the music? What kind of music are you going to use? Are being instruments used?
There will be live instrument use. Okay. And then we are also using with we are working with a producer of... We're going to have some kind of electronic beat, but it's more in the frame of Afrobeat, reggaeton, Latin American beats. They are going to work with this sound, and also we're going to blur with some live sound and some also sound that is more ambient, that is more carrying. So it's going to be, but of course the sound is not going to be the original sound of the choreographers,
no,
because some of that was piano, and my piano skills are not there yet. So we thought about, you know, actualizing also the sound and working with sound that we like today. So the sound, I think the music is going to be more our music.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah. There's also a way to bring it to this time and to
exactly
make one piece of it, because these are these fragments, you have to put them together and make it a whole.
Definitely. But if we think about Afrobeats or reggaeton, they are context, musical contexts where are so creolized, that are so mixed, that I think they speak good to the works and to the people, the artists, you know, and to our realities too. We are working with a setting that is historical.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because the set is called Frise Asiatique, and it was in a museum in Kortrijk.
Mm-hmm.
And it was used for all pieces that were kind of in other places, like pieces that happened in, I don't know, in Africa or in Mexico, anywhere. And this I find very interesting. So one set, like a stage design, mm-hmm. that could serve for so many different worlds.
Yeah, great. Well, I'm looking very forward to see and hear it and experience this this piece. Thank you very much. I wish you very much luck with this performance, and I'm looking forward to see it.
Thank you very much for the invitation.
Holland Festival wordt mogelijk gemaakt door het ministerie van OCW, de gemeente Amsterdam, productiepartner Amodo, hoofdbegunstiger Fonds 21, HF Business Partners, particuliere fondsen en vele vrienden. Exotica is mede mogelijk gemaakt door Institut Français NL en onderdeel van de Amodo Holland Festival reeks.